before we get started, I just want to say thank you to everyone who streamed or downloaded last week's episode featuring Sebastian Salazar and Chris Durkin, the official relaunch of Pitch Pass. Thank you so much for getting back into Pitch Pass. Please spread the word to your friends. Rate the show on iTunes or however you get your podcast. Just got word that we are now on Spotify as well, so there's really no reason why you can't get into Pitch Pass, including this episode. Let's get into it.
Houston, Dynamo, Portland, Timbers, Sporting Kansas, Los Angeles, Galaxy.
Pitch Pass.
This is your home.
Toronto, FC.
Real Salt Lake.
This is my red, white, and blue.
Chicago Fire.
This is my anthem to you.
Columbus Crew.
FC Dallas.
New York Red Bulls.
Pitch Pass, your all-access credential to the people that matter in MLS. Here's your host, Greg Roach.
MLS Cup playoffs officially underway this week. We're going to focus on the DC United Columbus Crew knockout round match in this edition of Pitch Pass. Later, we'll talk to former DC United man, now current Columbus Crew man. See, that's why we got him on. Patrick Mullins, he'll join us after we hear from the man who covers the Crew for the Columbus Dispatch. His name is Andrew Erickson. He joins us right now. Andrew, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. Couple days away from a big knockout round game, just trying to write a few preview stories in advance, but everything's going well.
I would like to get to that in just a second. We have two things to cover first. One, of course, is the latest on the Save the Crew, or saved. It's saved now, right? That's the hashtag.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are taking a Sharpie to their sign shirts and scarves and things like that and putting an extra D on there. So yeah, that's typically how things have gone recently.
So that's what we'll get to next. But first, you know, when we used to talk with somebody from the Dispatch, it was our friend Adam Jardy, and
right.
He is the biggest Oasis stan in the world. So if we're going to start a relationship, Andrew, I need to know right now, who is your band?
Oh man, I like a little Tame Impala, Mac DeMarco occasionally. I like to mix it up a little bit, so kind of just depends.
Unlike Adam, you have updated your preferences sometime in the last 25 years.
Wow, that's a dig at Adam. He's a great writer, but yes, music is out of date occasionally.
All right, good. So you're an alternative rock guy for the most part. We will get along very, very well. Let's talk Saved the Crew. And for people, and I assume any MLS fan would listen to this, but mostly DC United fans, since we're going to be doing a preview of the knockout round match. What is the latest for someone who is not in Columbus on the future and status of the Crew?
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, Major League Soccer announced that they had made significant progress with a group, a local group, if you will, that includes Brown owners G.D. and Jimmy Haslam, as well as the Edwards family of Columbus. That group is, of course, intent on purchasing the Crew and keeping the team in Columbus. Obviously marks a significant change from a year ago when Precourt Sports Ventures announced that they would consider the possibility of relocating the team to Austin, Texas after the 2018 season. Where that stands now and when that shifts and the ownership changes over, I don't know that there's a specific date in mind. I would be surprised if it got to, say, mid-January without there being a sale completed. And then obviously you have stadium considerations and things like that. But I think that's all being discussed right now. And I think it's more of a question of when, not if, at this point.
You've been there from the beginning. You've actually covered a lot of the stuff on the Austin side as well.
Right.
Miraculous is obviously too strong of a word, but this is as close to miraculous as you can get in sports.
I think it was more... I think over time you saw it start to shift. I maybe would have used that word, say, if this would have happened in January or February. I think as time dragged on and you saw things, how things progressed in Austin after they got their term sheet approved with Austin City Council in August, things went quiet for about a month, month and a half. Meanwhile, the group of local investors had been communicating with the league since March, and those discussions were continuing to progress. The lawsuit by the city of Columbus and state of Ohio against Precourt Sports Ventures and Major League Soccer continued, and it didn't show any signs of really going away. So all those factors brought us to a point where we are now, where there's significant progress toward a sale. And I think the Austin situation still needs to kind of find its direction. So I think it just played out over time. But you're right. Initially, if you would have told me that this would have been the outcome, I might have looked at you a little funny.
What's in it for the Haslams?
I think they have tried to show over time that they are, you know, committed to Ohio people, and you know, they've said a number of times that, you know, they recognize that a team belongs to the community. Obviously, they have connections to Columbus Partnership CEO Alex Fisher, and I think he's explained, you know, to them what a soccer team means to the community, and what it means to Columbus, which is trying to paint itself as the growing city in the Midwest. You know, they're talking about, you know, the next 40 years, another million people being in the Columbus region. If you lose your Major League Soccer team, that obviously is a big knock to that city's ego. So I think, you know, they're trying to get in, obviously, with a growing Columbus, to show that they're committed to Ohio and to show that they can, you know, build something with a community. So whether that can be done or not, I don't know. And I think, you know, they'll definitely have to prove it with things like the stadium, with things like player acquisitions. Will they be able to spend the money, and is there a want to spend money? I think that's all to be determined. But I think initially, at least, they want to show that, you know, they're committed to help building a community and you know, building a community asset.
It's a confusing situation all over the place, especially if you're an outsider. The thing that you just mentioned a few moments ago that has kind of like got my eyebrow up is, how is it that when you say the sale, who is selling to who? Is Precourt going to get money for having an expansion team in Austin? What do you mean by sale, and who's paying what to MLS and to whom?
So I've been told the most likely scenario would involve this Columbus group buying the Columbus MLS operating rights directly from Major League Soccer. And then Anthony Precourt and Precourt Sports Ventures would transfer their equity in the league down to Austin. So I don't know if there is a specific rider or anything like that that would allow him to get any money, but the way it's been described would seem to indicate that the money being transferred would come directly from the Columbus investors to the league, you know, and then how it's dispersed after that, I don't know. But I think that would be the specific transaction, at least in the most likely scenario, if that were to play out.
And Precourt won't have to pay the expansion fee to get the team in Austin.
No. I would be shocked if that was the case. It just sounds like it's a, you know, transfer of his some equity down to Austin.
You know, and I'm trying to go through the list of winners in this whole situation. Obviously, Hardcore Crew fans are the biggest outwardly winners. But you know, Precourt's a winner. He gets the team where he wanted it all along. My question, though, Andrew, is how big of a winner / loser is Don Garber in this whole thing? He took a lot of slack for kind of letting this happen behind the scenes. But then again, everything is kind of working out where now the team is still in Columbus. Austin is going to be in Austin. They do miss out on the expansion fee. But if you're Don Garber right now, are you breathing a sigh of relief?
Well, I think there's a little bit of both. And I think, as you mentioned, you look over the course of the process. Obviously, they placed a lot of trust in Anthony Precourt that he would be able to pull off this move effectively, and that they would be able to do it in such a way to where, you know, the negative PR would be minimal. Obviously, you know, given the direction they had to change down there, moving stadium sites, you know, going to a site that's 10 miles north of downtown, obviously that changes the perception of not only Anthony Precourt, but the league for showing support with respect to that situation and to that particular owner. So I think you can say maybe a little bit of a loser in that case, but a winner in the sense that, you know, Columbus was one of your struggling markets, one of your more stagnant markets, and was behind in terms of, you know, jersey sponsorship and stadium sponsorship. And now you have an NFL owner in that market and what seems to be a more committed local ownership group. So I think it's a win. It's a win-win in that sense, in that, you know, the Columbus fans are happy. And I think the league is also happy in that you have a deep-pocketed, stable ownership group that should be taking over this team relatively soon.
All right, so last two things. First, from the Columbus angle, the next step, obviously, is the stadium, I would assume, which is a horrible thing to do when you're talking about MLS front office stuff, but I would assume none of this is okayed or stamped of approval until the viable path to the stadium is done, correct?
Yeah, I'm not sure specifically when that or you know what they have to secure before that is finalized. But I mean, I think it's very clear on both sides, not just the league, but the prospective ownership group that, you know, you can't be playing at Moffer Stadium 6, 7, 8 years from now. I mean, I know they've said there isn't a specific date by which they need to be playing in a new stadium, but I think that's, you know, mutually agreed upon is if the team is going to be successful down the road, they're going to have some sort of stadium solution that's not Moffray. So I think that's mutually agreed upon. But, you know, to your point of, you know, what needs to be signed and what needs to be secured, I don't know. I know they've spoken to land parcel owners in the arena district west of the Blue Jackets arena in Columbus, and that seems to be a site that would be favorable to both parties, but what they need to get done and when I'm not specifically sure.
You're on the ground in Columbus, obviously writing for the Dispatch. What is the turnaround time for when we can say this is the Columbus Crew fan base? They've been jerked around for the last 18 months. If you're believing reports from an outsider's perspective, they were being jerked around as far as no advertising or marketing for the club since Precourt kind of took over. When do we say, okay, starting at this point, we can now judge the Crew's fan base on its own merits rather than everything else that they've been through over the last 4 or 5 years?
I think you can, you know, there are two factors. One would be, you know, transferring ownership to, you know, a local group, and you have that, you know, marketing, you have the outreach to the local fan base that, you know, the fans feel is adequate. So I think that would be number one. And then number two is playing in a soccer specific stadium closer to downtown. I think once those things are in place, and that could be, you know, 4 or 5 years from now,
exactly.
then you could judge, you know, all right, is this a soccer market? You know, it's been said all along that, you know, it would take local ownership to make this work in Columbus. Now you'll have all those things in place, and all your excuses, as they were, you know, would be gone. You know, can you drum up that consistent support for the team? And I think a lot of people believe that is the case. You know, obviously the Blue Jackets in the past couple of years have done well in terms of TV ratings and in terms of attendance. The Columbus Clippers, which is a AAA franchise, you know, are consistently toward the top of the International League in attendance. And Ohio State football is obviously its own, you know, separate beast that yep. is there no matter what, win or lose. So, you know, I think the Crew fans believe they can get to that level. It's just going to be a matter of once those things are in place, can that actually happen?
I'm not going to call you an expert in this field, but you're more of an expert than anybody that I know, and especially me. So I do want to ask you one question about Austin. It seems to me, literally following along your Twitter feed for the council meetings, it's been more of a okay kind of reaction from the general consensus of Austin. Is Austin going to work in MLS?
You know, I think it's, I mean, if you're talking about the demographics that the league wants, you know, a young city where people generally have money, you have in theory what would be corporate support there. You have a like of soccer in terms of the, you know, Premier League ratings they get every Saturday and Sunday. So, I mean, all the pieces are there for it to be successful. I think the questions you ask are, you know, is the stadium in a good location where it can be accessed by people? I think that is questionable with the site that they've selected down there. You wonder about the proximity to Dallas and Houston. Will that hurt them? You know, Dallas and Houston obviously aren't crushing it in terms of attendance. Can this be a success story that maybe bucks the trend in terms of MLS teams in Texas? I mean, I think, you know, the third thing is, you know, it's going to be who Anthony Precourt surrounds himself with in terms of front office people. How well do they know their communities to where they can get people to the stadium? Because that, you know, obviously there's a little bit on the city there in terms of not providing the business support and providing some of the overall support to make the team successful, but some of that's on Anthony Precourt too, you know, so they're going to have to figure out how to make that a successful brand and to be able to get people to come to the stadium on a consistent basis.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing that at least me personally, I'm taking a wait and see approach, because you're right. You lay it all out like that, it should be a Southern Portland. It's very similar type of vibe between the cities. But I really can't have any trust or faith that Precourt's going to hire the right people or lay out this process in a way that's going to make it successful from the get-go.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, and like you said, I mean, I think it's a wait and see thing. Obviously, their staff—they don't have a full front office staff to roll out marketing plans and season ticket sales and things like that. So, I think until that happens, I'll reserve judgment, and you know, we'll see what happens once they start their efforts full force. And you know, it's hard to say right now just because there isn't a specific start date. You have, you know, the league essentially saying before 2021 or sooner. So you know, we'll have to see what schedule they're on and when they start those efforts in earnest.
So let's start focusing back on the team as we get ready for a Thursday and their knockout playoff match at Audi Field versus DC United. Good segue question. What's been the player and coaching staff kind of reaction to this whole thing? Has there been an audible or visible sigh of relief that you are getting working the crew beat?
I think so, just in the sense that they had been dealing with this for the past year, and for the most part, their information was either the same or less than, you know, what myself as a reporter had. So, you know, just to be in that kind of rudderless position of, okay, well, we don't know if the team is staying or going. I think just to now have a more definitive path of, you know, all right, it's looking likely that there will be a team here in 2019. I think that is a relief in a weight off their shoulders. I think for the most part, they were able to rally around the fact that they were dealing with this situation and nobody else was. So they almost made it a positive in a way. But to have a course for next year and to know what's going to happen to the team, I think, has been a positive thing for the group.
I read your latest piece in the Dispatch up this morning. We're recording this on a Tuesday. It seems as if the players are kind of loose, as they probably should be after what they did last year going into Atlanta and kind of snuffing out their hot run. You got a couple quotes from Zach Steffen, from Justin Meerum. Does that seem to be the prevalent opinion from the entire team and staff?
Yeah, and you know, you look at a guy like Justin Meerum, who's been with the team for a long time. This will be his fourth playoff, you know, appearance, fourth set of playoff appearances with this team. And he said, you know, nothing's changed in the sense that they know they're going into this game as an underdog, and very few people would predict them to win this game. So I think there is a looseness that comes with that the pressure is not necessarily on you. Obviously, playoffs naturally create this kind of pressure, but I think they go in knowing that, you know, they're capable, they have experience, you know, they've played okay against the top teams in the Eastern Conference. Not great, not awful. So I think if they have a good day, they're certainly capable of winning this game. But not a lot of people believe at the end of the day that they'll win that game. So I think there's a little bit of, you know, chip on the shoulder mentality that comes with that.
And I get that. Look, it feels right to make those parallels, but for me, there's a couple of different things from 2017 to 2018 that would give me pause if I'm a Crew fan. Number one, Atlanta wasn't high flying going into the playoffs last year,
exactly.
Whereas DC United is. So it's not a like for like kind of thing. And I also feel like Columbus was a little more consistent last year, whereas this year they're kind of tripping their way into the playoffs. And if I'm a Crew fan, those are the two things where I'm like, eh.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, just the arcs that both of those seasons took, because I think about last year they had, I think they were like 10-12-1 going into a July 4th game against Minnesota United, and had a few games where their backs were up against the wall and they really needed to win it. They were a team that they were able to score pretty consistently. It was just a matter of how much they were going to give up out of the back. And then they started to tighten things up in terms of their defense, and they still were able to score. And that's why you look at their last 10 games last year, they were 6-0-4. So they were able to find that momentum and have a strong, you know, groundswell of momentum going into the playoffs. This year, you're right. I mean, they were more consistent to start the year. And you looked at, you know, various checkpoints, whether it was the 20th game or the 25th game, they had a better record and a better points total than they had ever had under Greg Berhalter. But they weren't, you're right, able to find that second gear in the last 10 games of the season. I think we're 3-4-3 the last 10 games, and it's the worst last 10 games under Greg Berhalter. So it is kind of uncharted territory in that sense, that they don't have that momentum that they've had in previous years going into the playoffs. all they really have to ride on is the experience they've had in previous playoff runs. And, you know, we'll see if they're able to tap into that. But you're right. They certainly don't have their momentum they had in previous years or the type of momentum that DC has coming into this game.
Stefan obviously is a key. He took a bit of a knock against Minnesota. Do you have any update on his? I'm sure he'll be playing, but how is he feeling going into Thursday?
Yeah, he's fine. And, you know, I think where it got him in the head was the lucky part for the Crew. He got it right in the forehead. It wasn't in his temple or another, you know, bad part of his head. You know, the swelling had gone down significantly as of yesterday and again today. So I think he'll be fine. I would look at Rodriguez's ankle in Minnesota. I mean, that, you know, that collision, I think he might have taken the worst of it. So I think the Crew definitely dodged a bullet and that Stefan will be healthy. And, you know, we'll see if he has to make another 8 saves in this knockout round game. I don't know if they'll be able to survive that against Rooney and Acosta.
What is it, if you're talking to a DC United fan, and we've heard that Greg Berhalter has a style, what is that style that we can expect on Thursday as it plays out versus DC United?
So they typically like to play out of the back. You know, they typically try to, you know, create ball movement to pull a defense apart. And as simple as that sounds, you know, it's worked really well for them. They're able to combine in the final third and you use that quick ball movement to their advantage and create goal scoring opportunities for their wingers, for their fullbacks, and for their forward and central attacking midfielder Federico Higuain. But there have been other cases this season where a defense will be very compact against them and they've slowed down their ball movement and they haven't looked like themselves. So I'm curious to see which version of the Crew shows up, if they're able to move the ball with confidence, if they're able to play out of the back with confidence, you know, and if they're able to pull DC United apart at all. Because I think it's going to take an early goal or something to shock the system of DC United for the Crew to stay in this game, just because that attack of DC United is so powerful.
And speaking of, I want to ask you specifically about two Crew players. One is, for me, is a wild card, so we'll start there. Justin Meerham scares the crap out of me. If you watched what he did when he was with Orlando against United, obviously this is pre-Rooney, first game of the season, he basically put the team on his back and was a one-man wrecking crew. Hasn't parlayed that into a great season, but he's a guy that, if he's up for the match, will be a problem for United. Is anything in his current form give a Crew fan hope that that could happen on Thursday?
Well, I think he's fit. I mean, you look at, you know, he came from Orlando not having played throughout the month of July, and it took him, you know, 5, 6, 7 games with the Crew to be able to reestablish that fitness. So I think that's there. I just think you're looking for that same quality that he showed last year when he had 13 goals and 9 assists and really was a killer for most of the season for this Crew team. I think he's still looking to find that. I know he believes he's capable of that again. I know Greg Berhalter knows, you know, believes he's capable of that again. It's just a matter of finding it on a consistent basis. Is he able to play guys behind the back line and really create some danger? You know, he's shown in previous seasons that he's been able to do that. You mentioned had a couple moments with Orlando earlier this year, but I think they're still kind of waiting for that those moments to happen again with the Crew.
And then finally, Matt Doyle of MLSsoccer.com brought up an interesting point about Will Trapp and how this is going to be a really difficult match for him, because where Rooney and Acosta really love to do their thing is right where Will Trapp is going to be set up. Is he enough, and I'm asking this as somebody who has not seen Will Trapp in a day-to-day basis, is he enough of a destroyer to break up those interplays that they definitely were going to want to do against the Crew?
Well, you're right. I think that's the one knock on Will Trapp, is that, you know, when there's chaos, that's when he's been at his worst. You know, I think the thing to be said for Will Trapp is he's able to control a game very well. He's very secure on the ball. He's able to coordinate, you know, the Crew's attack in a way, playing out of the back. So he's very steady in that sense. But, you know, going up against talented attackers like DC has, I think that will be a challenge. The one player I would look at, and a player the Crew and Trapp as well might need to lean on, is Artur. who's shown he's able to commit a foul if need be, if a play looks like it's going to get out of hand, and seems to have a good awareness with respect to the game. I think they'll obviously need him. And then, behind Will Trapp, Jonathan Mensah, has been a very steady player at center back for the Crew, and somebody who was on yellow card suspension for the Minnesota game, but the Crew is fortunate to have back. So if Trapp isn't up to the challenge, which I think he will be just because of his playoff experience, that's a guy they're going to have to lean heavily on for sure.
Well, give my best to Jardy, and hopefully he has visions of Noel Gallagher's high-flying birds dancing in his head. And thank you very much, Andrew Erickson. Columbus Dispatch, what is your Twitter handle so everybody can follow along? Because it's going to be an eventful offseason no matter what happens on Thursday for the Crew.
That's right. It's at A. Erickson CD.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the time.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me.
In my opinion, is nothing better than talking to the beat guys, because they're the ones with the team every single day. You got somebody, a national ESPN person come in. Sure, they're an outsider looking in, or you get somebody, a blogger who's not, doesn't have the ability to be with the team every day. Both serve a purpose, but there's nothing better than talking to a beat writer because they have the pulse of the team. Thank you, Andrew Erickson, for providing the pulse of the Columbus Crew. But let's go even deeper inside the Crew with somebody who plays for Columbus. Well, he plays for Columbus now. First half of the year, he was a member of DC United, so he is a perfect person to kind of talk to as we get ready for DC United versus Columbus Crew on Thursday at Audi Field. Got a former Terp on the line in Patrick Mullins. Patrick Mullins, this is Roach from Pitch Pass and DC 101. It's great to speak with you, my friend.
Good morning, Roach. It's good to be talking to a DC person again.
And I mentioned the DC 101 thing because, fingers crossed, I'm hoping that you listen to DC 101 a little bit while you are at University of Maryland and, of course, your time with DC United. Although you may be a country guy, so let's lock in on your musical tastes.
I may be a country guy. I am a little bit of a country guy, but I do remember DC 101 because I wouldn't say I pick one genre over the other. It just depends how I'm feeling. And alternative rock, it goes pretty good in most moods.
Okay, good. And you drop the alternative rock, which means you know the format. So you know what? You consider your credentials stamped. You're ready and proof to come in and hang out.
Well, since we're doing this so early in the morning, I'm kind of feeling like a radio talk show host would be. And I always thought it was kind of difficult for them to get their personalities up, get their senses flowing that early in the morning. So I'm trying to enter my own radio show host right now.
I'm glad you brought that up. Usually I would imagine when an athlete or a musician does an interview with a radio station in the morning, it's because the morning show is on and you're kind of forced to do it. This was your idea to do this early morning thing, Patrick.
Yes, it was my idea, and it just kind of worked out well with the schedule this week. So we're now into MLS Cup playoff mode, which means a quick turnaround in games. We played on Sunday, and now we'll be heading to D.C. this afternoon for the match tomorrow. So I wanted to make sure I got some time in with you this morning and talked with you on whatever you wanted to talk about before we made the trip down to D.C., because at that point, it would be all business.
I appreciate that, and I thank you for that, Patrick. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking to myself, is this what Patrick Mullins expected when he became a professional soccer player? As a little boy, as he dreamed of being a pro soccer player, was it waking up this early, or was it, hey, I'm going to play soccer for a living, so that means I'm going to be able to sleep in as late as I want?
I'm not sure I was really thinking too much about the sleep schedule. I was more just thinking about whether or not I could even make it as a pro, and it was a dream of mine. So if that means getting up at a certain time to talk with journalists and interviews like you, it's well worth it to do that. And to be honest, I'd say as professional athletes, we live a pretty nice life. So I don't think this is too early.
Agreed. But I just figure College Park on a random Tuesday morning, you're sleeping in or you have an 8 a.m. class and you're thinking to yourself, you know what? When I go pro, no more 8 a.m. classes for me. And yet here we are doing basically an 8 a.m. class.
I do not feel like I'm in a lecture hall right now, but I did have a few of those 8 a.m. classes you're talking about. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And usually I was about one of maybe five people at that class when it was about a 100-person lecture.
You know what? Let's start there. I was going to start with the Crew stuff, but let's get there chronologically. You left DC and DC United in July of this year. So this is kind of an interesting situation for you in that you spent half of the season with the team that you're playing against in the playoffs and the other half in the team that you're playing for in the playoffs. Has that been helpful for you or your teammates or the coaching staff that you did half of the season with DC United?
Well, this wasn't exactly the first time I'd done a midseason move. So when I was traded to DC United, I moved, I believe, a couple weeks later in the season schedule from New York than the trade happened this year. I was prepared for what that was like. And knowing coming to Columbus from the outside looking in, you can see that it's a very disciplined team and a team that's about the details. So when I came in, I knew I would have to really step up my learning curve and kind of accelerate my integration into the team. So I wanted to make sure I took my previous experiences of doing that with DC, and I did that, I think, pretty well, considering I went in and scored some goals there, and we went on a good playoff run. So I kind of wanted to take those experiences and bring them into my transition to Columbus. But also to get in a little bit in terms of, you mentioned kind of our preparation this week for DC. Of course, I know a lot about the guys at DC, the coaching staff, really the club as a whole. So I want to be a resource for our team here in any way that I can, because as I mentioned, once we get to DC and even in our preparation this week, it's all business. I want to go in there and win a playoff game, because there's nothing quite like winning in the playoffs. Particularly, I think on the road, winning in the playoffs would be something special.
You talked about your time with NYCFC and then your move midseason to DC United back in 2016. This was a little bit different, but I would imagine, just like that trade, you probably weren't too mad at the actual trade. Sure, behind the scenes, it was maybe a hassle to have to move midseason, but just like with NYCFC, this seemed like a nice avenue for you to carve out a role for yourself with the Crew that was probably up in the air and in flux, and especially, you know, as a United fan, I see the way Darren Maddox's minutes have really been reduced and kind of gone away since Wayne Rooney's arrived. You must have embraced this opportunity to go, okay, you know what? I know what my role is going to be, and I can carve out even more if I go in and do my job.
So that's a good point. I think in professional sports, things are constantly happening and plans are evolving and changing. So, you know, if you went back 2 years ago, you know, I was the starter at DC United and leading them into the playoffs. And there's no guarantee that that's going to continue on in the years after. So as it happened, I had an injury-filled year last year at DC, and it wasn't a very good year for us as a team level. We didn't win as many games as we would have liked, didn't make the playoffs. I just don't think the fans probably enjoyed our games as much as we as a team wanted them to. So, you know, going into this year, there was always going to need to be a readdressing of how we were going about as a team at DC United. And I still very much had a role there to play, and I took that very seriously. I take every time that I was there as much trying to get out of it as I could, because I really care for the club and I care for the people there. And the way that the season went, we had a tough away matches all throughout the beginning, as I'm sure you know. So kind of getting through that was our main focus, and that was very much my focus as well. So once again, as things changed and a certain Wayne Rooney came into town, then a couple of things shuffled on the deck as well. And, you know, now I'm at Columbus Crew. But like I said, I think that's all part of professional sports. It's all things happening and evolving and changing as you have teams that want to be more and more competitive to win. And I've been a part of some teams that have gone on an MLS Cup run and some playoff runs. So I've seen exactly what that takes. And I know that what I bring to the table is something that can really mix in well with a culture that is trying to do that.
Your time with Wayne Rooney as a member of DC United was very short, but my sources, which granted, are probably very unreliable, say that you guys formed such a bond that Wayne still reaches out to you this day and laments the fact that he didn't get more time to spend with you. True or not true, Patrick Mullins?
Well, I know you know Sam Legg over at CNN, so he's a pretty good source. I'm not saying he would be your source for that, because I had very limited time with Wayne. I'd say about a week of training, which was nice, especially in the season, to have a player of his caliber and ability to come in almost as a reignition of training in a way. So that was kind of cool in the middle of the season to have that. But to answer your question, no, I haven't heard too much from Wayne post trade, and I really didn't expect to. It probably would be a little bit much if maybe I had, just because we really didn't have time to get to know each other. In fact, he was one of the last people I saw on the way out of the facility when I actually found out I was traded, because he just happened to be going to Ben's office around the same time, just after he had told me the news that I was going to Columbus. So it was kind of a funny interaction of, Wayne, it was nice to meet you, and now I'll see you down the road. I'm sure this wasn't the first time he had seen this happen in the business, maybe not quite like a trade in MLS, but I'm sure it won't be the last either.
You know, you talked about the 2017 season for DC United and how difficult it was, especially for you with the injuries. And from what I've read, your first real major injury. As we went into 2018, the talk was, okay, well, Patrick Mullins has got to get his confidence back. He's got to get his confidence back. So let me ask you, as a striker who has scored many, many goals, how important as a striker is it to have that kind of confidence? And did you feel, once you got back and started playing with Columbus and banging in a few goals, that you are back at that confidence level that you were at the end of 2016?
Confidence, it's an interesting concept, particularly when it comes to forwards. A big part of me, I think that's something that you can work on. It's not maybe contrary to what some people think is something that people either have or they don't. I think a lot of my confidence comes from the training ground, and not only just doing the repetitions of the physical reps of finishing the ball in the net, recognizing goal scoring opportunities, creating goal scoring opportunities and finishing them off, but also the sensory side involved with scoring goals. So I think that's a big thing that I try and focus on my confidence, is that if I feel that I'm at the highest capability that I possibly can, in terms of sniffing out goals, in terms of just being in the right spot at the right time, based on feeling out the game, then that gives me confidence. That gives me almost a level of happiness in my head to think I want to keep doing that over and over again. So I think confidence really comes from that. It comes from, like I said, not the repetition of the reps of finishing goals off, but just the feeling you get as you're doing those actions.
That's a fascinating answer, one that I haven't heard before. And you're right. It is one of those kind of like those brain stimulation things where you get that releasing of the euphoria of hearing the sound of the ball, like, caressing the back of the net as you strike one really clean, or the sound of your foot hitting the ball and thinking to yourself, I caught that one perfectly. And it's those kind of feelings, you're saying, if we can get those and make those, that I'm chasing that feeling, is what gets your confidence up.
You clearly have more experience with soccer than just a DC United fan. When you mention the sound of the ball, that's something I actually think about a lot, particularly when we're passing. Usually I heard from a coach that I had throughout the years that he doesn't even need to see the ball to know if it's a good pass. It's all about how it sounds. He could be looking away and know if a passing drill is good or not by the way the ball's rolling on the blades of grass, and how the angle of it being struck off a foot determine that rolling on the grass. So that just kind of reminded me of the fascinating details that coach paid attention to. And I think it's something that maybe when I was younger I couldn't quite understand or pick up on, those sensory things that really give me a lot of joy in the game. But as I've gotten older, I definitely appreciate those more.
So I know you're on a time crunch. I want to ask you a couple of quick things about the Crew itself before we get into the knockout round tomorrow at Audi Field, DC United versus Columbus Crew. First thing is it's a saved the Crew kind of thing. You got jumped in. You jumped into kind of a whirlwind of activity with the uncertainty around the Crew. I talked to Andrew Erickson before you of the Columbus Dispatch. He was there the whole time, but you got plopped right in. Is there a nice or is there a sense of relief throughout the locker room of, okay, you know what? We know where we're going to be next year. And I know as professional athletes, you're always prepared to move. But for a franchise to move is probably a little more shocking than just getting traded. Is there a much more sense of calm in the locker room knowing that there's a more clearer path to where we're going to be next year?
Well, entering into Columbus, I had followed the situation with the ownership and the news of what was coming out from not really Twitter, but some of the more press releases were either from the league or from certain publications. So I only knew as much as you did coming into it. And I always reiterate to people, that's kind of how it was since I've arrived here too. As players, there had been talk about it in the locker room, but really we focused on our team here this year. I think that's a very common theme for teams to tap into, is that this group in this locker room right now isn't going to be together past this year. That's just a fact. Not every single person is going to be in there. So we need to put any distractions, whether they're coming from our own play on the field or things going off the field, we need to put those distractions aside, because they're only going to disrupt what we're doing in the locker room. And credit to the coaches. I think they've done a great job of preaching that message and focusing on the details to where most of these thoughts are, you know, common human emotions that would come with the possibility of something happening. That they really, when we're in our facility, when we're working, they don't come up. So I think that's a great credit to the leadership here, as well as the players, to really buy into that. And obviously, I know nothing has been absolutely officially been done, but there has been some news that was dropped in the last couple of weeks about the team and the club going forward. But the MO for us really has stayed the same. It's that we want to make something memorable with this group of players in this locker room. And we're now in the playoffs. It's go time. And it's really the chance we have now to make those memories.
I wanted to ask you about Greg Berhalter before I let you go. The rumors are that he is in line to become the next coach of the U.S. men's national team. Obviously, that is not a question that is going to be answered by you or should be asked by me, especially in the middle of a playoff run with Columbus, although that would be a good way to throw you guys off of your game. So maybe I will ask you. No, I won't ask you that, Patrick. What I will ask you is what kind of style, what kind of coach is Greg Berhalter in a day-to-day? What is his expectations? Does he lay that out clearly? Does he let you guys find your way? What's Greg Berhalter's coaching style?
Well, Greg, he has been very impressive to me since I came in. You hear a lot from other players to the league of what he's like, and obviously from watching from afar, you could see that he was doing something the right way here. They've had success in the last couple of years, but now to see it firsthand, I see some of those reasons why that is. I think Greg is a person that doesn't leave any details to chance. If it's something that he can control or make sure that something is clearer for his team or the staff, he's going to do those things. And I think the willingness and the determination that he has to do that is the biggest key to why he's been successful as a coach and why the Crew has been successful, because we play in a very systematic way here where we put priority on having the ball. And I think in soccer, which can inherently become a game of chaos and unpredictability, we like to have things where we know where each other are on the field. And that takes discipline and willingness to hammer out the little details of positioning, of knowing exactly what the other person's thinking before you even have the ball. So I think those those key things are what Greg is like the most. And I think teams around the league, fans of the league, can see that with how we play. That we really, really don't let anything not become something of importance. It's, if we can take care of it, we're going to take care of it and make sure that all the details have been met in our preparation.
Now, is it going to be awkward that we're signing off, but I'm not going to say good luck in your match versus DC United? Are you going to make that awkward between us, Patrick?
No, that's fair enough. I'm looking forward to being back with some DC United fans like yourself, and to be back in the district. I always wanted to play in Audi Field, and I know I saw some of the quotes from players there of how special it was to them, the opening, and even how emotional that could be. And I think I might not have the ability to say I'm still on the team there, but I still want to play on that field, and I still want to feel the emotions that come with that. So I'm looking forward to that. So I guess we can just say let's have a good night tomorrow night, because I assume you'll be there as well. You don't need to tell me good luck, but
thank you.
I'll see you soon.
That's a perfect way to end. And I'm going to let you let me go back to bed so that you can go and do whatever it is you do this early in the morning. Patrick Mullins, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem. I'm going to go get some breakfast. So have a good day.
For more show information, go to pitchpass.com.